everyone. Welcome to the debut episode of Ask the Outlaw. I am the Outlaw John Rocha here for the Outlaw Nation channel, specifically for the Outlaw Nation patrons. Thank you all so much for being a part of the Outlaw Nation Patreon. You can go there to www.patreon.com/John Rocha, see all the multiple tiers we've got there for you to participate in these shows that we've got launching for the next few weeks. We did Criterion Corner last week. This week is Ask the Outlaw. I thought it'd be a fun way to kind of do a mailbag show with a little bit of a twist in that you're asking the Outlaw John Rocha, not just John Rocha, but the Outlaw John Rocha, the answer to your questions. And we've got 10 great questions today. And if you want to be part of this show going forward and have your questions submitted, you have to join at the $5 tier and above for the Patreon, and you can submit questions. I'm going to try to answer about 8 to 10 questions every month from the fans here for you all. And of course, I've made this video available to everybody. So even if you're not a patron, you can watch this video now, and maybe it'll inspire you to join the Patreon. And I also want to thank Robert Adams for the incredible graphics that he made. You know him from the Sin Fanatics. He did a fantastic job with these Ask the Outlaw graphics. So shout out to him. And thank you to Andrew Hale, who is the producer of the show, who compiled these questions for me. And let's get into it. All right, our first question is from the Aussie wonderkind himself, Alex O'Neill. He asks, with streaming shows beginning to increasingly release shorter seasons, from 10 down to 8 or 6 in some cases, do you think the 22-episode show is dead? And do you think we'll reach a point where the line between what constitutes a TV show and a movie becomes indistinguishable with more movies being produced by streaming services? For example, When They See Us, is it a miniseries or an extended movie released in parts? Well, Alex, let me jump into the last part of that question real quick and let you know you are the person who is consuming this media. So you decide for yourself, is it a miniseries or an extended movie released in parts? That's up to you to decide. Honestly, however they pitch it, doesn't really matter. You're the one that decides how you consume it in your mind. To answer your question, we need to go a little bit backwards into the past of TV. And let's start with the 50s and the 60s when they were doing shows here. And of course, there was only, what, 3 or 4 networks really around in the 50s and the 60s. They had 30-episode seasons. In fact, I Love Lucy, if you remember that show, had 35 half-hour episodes per season starting in 1951. So certainly it was back then that you had way more episodes per season. It's because there was less content. But as the years go on into the 1970s and networks start seeing that they can attract younger, more discerning viewers, then shows started going down to 22 to 24 weekly installments. And some bigger shows like Dallas had 30 episodes per season. So you saw that. But as it was going into the 90s and the early 2000s, we saw other cable networks come into the fray. Of course, Fox did itself, but you had other cable networks like HBO, USA, TNT, FX, AMC, and of course the streaming services we see now with Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, and what have you. And they didn't have to adhere to a TV season. Their drive was to get subscribers. That's what was important for the streaming services. For HBO, it was about subscribers. And so for TNT and FX and all those, it's about getting cable subscribers involved. So there was a lot that goes into this thing. And as we went into 2015, prime shows like on HBO, like Silicon Valley and Veep and Game of Thrones, those had just 10 episodes, right? You look at Breaking Bad on AMC, I think it debuted to 7 or 8 episodes and then jumped to 13. So certainly we've seen a variety number of episodes now, as the number rather of streaming services and cable channels have increased, and more of them getting into scripted entertainment, we see the order number go down or fluctuate, but never go into the 20 to 22 range. And producing fewer episodes allows networks to expand the number of shows on their rosters, and this is an important thing, to appeal to different audiences. That's important if you want to stay alive. Not about ad revenue, as I said, it's about subscriber count, getting people involved. And also, one last thing, shorter runs attract big stars and big creatives to be a part of your network or your streaming service or your cable channel. Look at McConaughey and Woody Harrelson in True Detective, Al Pacino recently in Hunters for Amazon Prime, Robin Wright in House of Cards, Cate Blanchett recently in Mrs. America, even Viola Davis on an ABC primetime show negotiated the episode order down to 15 episodes because she's an in-demand actress for film as well. So this is all around. This is what's been happening lately. So you're asking me, will we go back to the 22-episode arc? I think for certain primetime shows, on the big networks like ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox, I think you'll see the 22 episode order still in play. We see that. And that I think that's possible because these networks can afford to dole out the money to put those shows in motion and create stars. I mean, Modern Family just recently wrapped up. I think Modern Family was 22 to 24 episodes a season. So it's still available in the big networks. But on the smaller networks, they don't have to do that. On the streaming services, they don't have to do that. They're about driving subscriber count. And I think us as a society are changing in how we're consuming media, because back in the 50s, there's three or four networks. Now there's so many that you can watch and enjoy, and original content coming out from streaming services as well. So there's a lot more demand on our time, a lot more demand on our attention. So therefore, a shorter amount makes it easier for you to binge on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday morning or throughout the week, one episode a day. It makes it easier to consume than if you've got 25 episodes. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be late to a show and you've got to catch up on 75 episodes before you can enjoy the current season of a show. So certainly that's something that they've factored into going forward. And I think we'll see more of these big primetime networks like ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox start to shorten their orders as well address that need with the fans. All right. Thank you so much for that question, Alex. I appreciate it. Good way to start the show. Our next question is from Travis Earle. He says, Roka, if Snyder's Justice League cut is a massive hit on HBO Max, do you think he'll have a chance to tell more stories within the universe he has created, either in film or on streaming? Best regards, Travis Earle. It's a great question, Travis. It's a great question, and the answer is, I don't know, to be honest with you, because the only reason this is happening, one of the reasons this is happening is because the regime changed at Warner Brothers, and the new regime that came in was more conducive or more open to hear from the fans who wanted to see a Justice League cut from Zack Snyder. They want this to happen, essentially a director's cut from Zack Snyder for Justice League. But then again, coronavirus made this possible because people are home. And also, a lot of the films that have been were in motion now had their production stopped or stalled. So they had to make up a little bit of time there, make up some money, and also make up some attention. Also, an HBO Max streaming service. You want to launch it, get people's attention. This is a great way to do it. So all the factors combined here to make this happen. So it's definitely an anomaly. It's rare when a studio says, you know what, our bad, let's bring back the original director to do his version or her version of a project that we already released, already made money off of, and already put out as an official product from our studio. So I think it all depends on how Zack Snyder works with this regime. I think it all depends on how people receive this and if he wants to go and do something that is, I think, HBO Max based. I'd be surprised if they let him go and make a movie for DC Warner Brothers. I think doing an HBO Max limited series run, as we just spoke in the earlier question, maybe a six to eight episode run or even a 4-episode run would work for Zack Snyder. Maybe doing something with Cyborg, fleshing him out a little bit so then Cyborg can vault into the movies. That's possible. Or Green Lantern. Maybe do something with Green Lantern. Certainly that was in play for Justice League, and we'll see how much of that shows up in his cut. A Green Lantern series would be fantastic on HBO Max that would vault maybe a Green Lantern Corps. I know Geoff Johns is working on it, but maybe Zack Snyder gets involved here. And I mean, wouldn't you love to see Zack Snyder's Guy Gardner Green Lantern? Come on, that would just be perfect. I'd say the jury is still out. We'll have to see how this whole experience goes down, but never say never in Hollywood. That's for damn sure. Thanks for the question there, Travis. All right, Michael Nip is up next. He asks, hey, John, is there anything that you like to collect that is movie related? And if so, what is your favorite item in your collection? I've enjoyed being a small part of the community since I joined a few months ago. Thank you for making me feel welcome. Well, first of all, Michael, you're not a small part of the Outlaw Nation. No one is a small part of the Outlaw Nation. You're all big parts of the Outlaw Nation because you make this thing breathe and live, and you pass it on to other people and get people involved in this thing. So all of you are an essential part of the Outlaw Nation as we build and build and build every week. Now, to answer your question, do I collect anything that is movie related? Aside from movies, I really don't. It's never been something for me to jump into necessarily. Now, have I bought shirts? Sure. Have I bought movie posters? Yes. I've got two great movie posters coming soon that I'll be putting up here in the Outlaw Nation studios. But no, I don't really collect stuff. But that being said, it's always great when studios want to send me stuff because it's cool to have like that lunchbox right there, that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood lunchbox is fantastic. I've got that 1917 box, little timepiece there that comes with it. Those are cool little items that they do, and I like to collect them and keep those. So I'm not a big collector, but I know a lot of people are. I have a lot of friends who do that. Mike Kalinowski collects stuff from movies as well. But as I get older, I just find that I need less clutter in my space and in my area. So for that reason, I don't collect them. But I absolutely respect the people who are avid collectors. My friend Rain's Car, he was a big, he's big into figures. He used to have entire rooms full of stuff. He'd buy two of each of the figures. He'd hang one up and then play with the other one. So, and I think he's got something called General Carr's Closet or General Rain's Closet, where he has some of his figures on sale for people to enjoy. So never been my thing, but I absolutely respect people who do it. All right, let's move on to the next question. That's from Charles Hawking. He says, if you could interview one comedian dead or alive, who would it be and why? Much love, whoop whoop. Yeah, Big Chuck, thank you so much. Big Chuck, Rapstar 92, I think that's right. You're always there on Mornings with the Outlaw, so I appreciate you being there, and I appreciate you sending your question, Charles. Thank you so much. Great question. If you could interview one comedian dead or alive, who would it be and why? Well, there's so many to choose from here. So many great ones, because I'm an avid fan of stand-up. I'm an avid fan of comedians. I mean, you could go to Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Carol Burnett, Joan Rivers, Rodney Dangerfield, Jerry Seinfeld, even Bill Burr recently, Chris Rock, Sarah Silverman, Leslie Jones, who's if you haven't seen Leslie Jones's stand-up on Netflix, do yourself a favor and watch that stand-up. It is absolutely hilarious. But my answer at the end of the day is always going to be Eddie Murphy. Eddie was the one who really got me into stand-up comedy. I borrowed cassettes from friends of mine when he came out with Delirious and the one before, I can't remember the one before that, but I would sit there and watch religiously and listen to him. He taught me how to cuss. He taught me about some of the weird things going on in the world and some of the sexual stuff as well. Eddie joked about all of that stuff. Yes, I know, problematic at now going back and listening to some of his homosexual jokes, homophobic jokes, some might say. So I understand and appreciate that. And Eddie's come out and apologized for those things. But I personally would love to sit down and talk with him because I also enjoyed his movies. I enjoyed his acting. And you saw his career progress from this hotshot kid on SNL into these movies, doing his stand-up routines. And then there's this switch. There's this switch that happens with Eddie where he stops being that young kid who's the underdog, and he all of a sudden understands the power he wields as a man and as a celebrity in Hollywood. And something changed. And I personally would love to sit down with him. And look, I would love to have this interview be off the record. So it would be my own personal thing to have that I can keep as a gem that no one else will ever get access to. Me sitting down with him for 3 hours and just talking about his life and having him really open up to me about the stages of his career, the stages of his life, and what changed and what influenced him. And none of it ever sees the light of day. Just man to man, human to human, we have a great conversation about it. That would be the person I'd love to interview the most. In that Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee episode, yeah, it was nice to have 45 minutes with him, but you could tell he was still reserved. He was guarded. All that stuff was there with Eddie. And I'd like to find a way to get through all those walls to get to the real Eddie Murphy and hear the honesty, because all the comedians talk about the fact that when they sit down with Eddie nowadays, even nowadays, Eddie is the funniest guy in the room. To explore such a brilliant comedy mind would be exciting for me personally. And like I said, wouldn't have to have it on the record. All right. Thank you so much for that question there, Charles. Really appreciate it, Chuck. All right, this one's from the Chapman family. Let me tell you something about the Chapman family. They're fantastic when they ask questions on the top 10, when Matt Nose and I do the top 10, and we do Topic Thunder. The Chapman family sends in some of the best questions, so I'm looking forward to reading this one. It says, hey, John, hope you are well. Loving all things top 10, Geek Buddies, Cinephiles, Outlaw Nation, and Schmodown. Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Chapman family. And don't forget SEN Live as well. I'm on that. And I'll be hosting on Tuesday. If you're listening to this when I drop this, I'm hosting this week on Tuesday, and I'll be guesting on Friday as one of the people out there in the bullpen having fun with Christian and the gang. They ask, how cool would it be one day for you to lead the Outlaw Nation faction in the Schmodown with your team consisting of Nost, Shannon, Mike, Steve, Kalinowski, etc. Pipe dream or real possibility? Cheers and take care. Well, like I said, the Chapman family never disappoints with their questions. Such a fantastic question. Yes. Is it a real possibility? Well, you never say never in the Schmodown. You never know what can happen for sure. It's not a pipe dream necessarily, but it is an interesting suggestion by you here, Chapman family. Yeah, I'd love to convince Nose to come back. So many people miss Matt in the Schmodown. Shannon McClung from the Geek Buddies. It'd be great to convince Shannon to be a part of the Schmodown. Mike Vogel as well. He'd be a great part of the IG division. I think Mike would kill the IG division. He's so smart about all those movies in the IG section of things. Steve Moore. Steve would be great too. Steve told me though in the past that the Schmodown intimidates him because his recall factor to get an answer for a movie or an actor or whatever, it'd be tough in 15 seconds for him to consistently be able to do that. So I'd have to train Steve up, or the crew would have to train Steve up to get his recall factor a little bit tighter and sharper. And of course, Kalinowski would be a fantastic player to have in our crew. And look, there's probably three or four more people. As you know, I roll deep when I go to see these premieres. 60 to 70 people going to see the big premieres in my crew of friends. I guarantee you there's at least three or four other members of my crew of friends who would love to be a part of the Schmodown and maybe get them in there. All these friends of mine who have had from anywhere from 4 or 5 years to 20 years to 25 years, it'd be fantastic to have this faction. And if Christian would let me become a manager down the road and draft my own team, my own friends, my own players that have nothing to do or have never played in the Schmodown, that would be fun as well. Just see what they would do. So great question, Chapman family. Not out of the realm of possibility. So I would say anything is possible depending on how things shake out. All right, let's move on to our next question. It's from Sean Barito. Sean Barito, shout out to Sean Barito. He's been a fantastic member of the Outlaw Nation. And also he's a supervising producer of these patron shows that I do for you all. So shout out to Sean Barito for being so incredibly kind with his time and his efforts. All right, his question is, what's up, Outlaw? Which of the three MCU trilogies do you think is the best? Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor. Also rank the three. Well, let me start off with the first part of your question. The best one is Captain America for me. That trilogy, hands down, is just incredible. Captain America, the First Avenger, Captain America, Winter Soldier, and Captain America, Civil War. Each one of those films building upon the film from before and increasing in scope. Incredible stuff. Certainly Winter Soldier is up there. Top two MCU movies, always vacillates between one and two in my mind, because that's a 70s political thriller disguised as a superhero movie. And you have Robert Redford involved in that as well. He's fantastic in that movie. You go to Civil War and there's that fight in the airport alone is worth the price of admission. But Captain America First Avenger is also one of these underappreciated MCU films that I love. It is as close as we've gotten to Richard Donner's Superman since Richard Donner's Superman. I love that. Now, coming up second, because I'm going to rank them as I talk about them, coming up second for me is the Iron Man trilogy. I enjoy Iron Man 1. We have no MCU universe without Iron Man 1 in 2008 coming out and being such a good movie by Jon Favreau, starring Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow, Jeff Bridges. You get into Iron Man 2, not as good as Iron Man 1, but lately there have been people who have stepped forward and defended Iron Man 2 and like Iron Man 2, simply because of Sam Rockwell's performance as Justin Hammer. Something about the past coming into the future, or in the present rather, to affect you. Interesting storyline. We do get Black Widow introduced in that one as well. I do like Iron Man 3. I enjoy Guy Pearce. I enjoy Rebecca Hall in that movie. I like what's explored here with the PTSD of Iron Man. What's that like? After what's happened with the Avengers in New York, he's struggling with whether he should be a superhero or not. And that is lifted straight out of the comics. Iron Man 3, really well done, in my opinion. All right, and coming in third is Thor, the Thor trilogy. I do like Kenneth Branagh's Thor, but I know it's not universally beloved. Thor the Dark World is the one that a lot of people put near the bottom of their MCU lists, even though I can defend Thor the Dark World and I do enjoy watching it. But you can argue that the villain is a bit, I don't know, kind of weak. Christopher Eccleston is a fantastic actor. For those of you who are big Doctor Who fans, certainly he does a great job, but it doesn't feel as strong as an MCU film should be. But we do have the Loki situation develop throughout this movie, where he becomes more of an anti-hero here because of his love for his mom, Rene Russo, when she is killed in Thor the Dark World. We see Thor and Loki develop more of a brother, caring brother relationship. And of course, Thor Ragnarok is absolutely the best of the bunch. What a fantastic movie. Incredibly funny. Taika Waititi does such a fantastic job directing the movie. And if Thor 4, that's coming out here with, or Thor, was it Love and Thunder, God and Thunder? When that comes out with Taika Waititi behind the helm again, if that's a fantastic film as well, and as University of Blood, Thor Ragnarok, then I think you can argue that all of a sudden Thor would vault into second place over Iron Man. Of course, it would mean it's no longer a trilogy, but still, if it turns out to be a fantastic film, it deserves to move up in the rankings overall. All right, thank you, Sean. Appreciate that question very much. Let me know what you think about these questions so far. We've hit just over the halfway mark. What are your answers to some of these questions? Let me know in the comments section below. You don't have to be a patron to respond in the comments section below or to give this video a like, which I would really appreciate. Moving that mouse button over, hitting that thumbs up button, and tell me how much you enjoy this show. All right, let's move on to our seventh question here. It's from Andrew Hale. Andrew Hale, who's the producer of this particular patron show, and he's done such a great job on the Discord as well. The reason the Discord has kind of woken up over the last few weeks is because of Andrew Hale's work and other people's work, but certainly Andrew Hale being one of those top people, and he's kind of revamped the Patreon to make it more clear about the benefits you get being a part of whatever tier you are on the Outlaw Nation Patreon. So I appreciate that, Andrew Hale. Let's get to your question. It says, hey, John, big fan. Well, thank you very much, Andrew. What is a movie that after only seeing it once, you watched it for the second time and had an almost completely different opinion compared to the first viewing? The time gap could be years between each other to maybe just a couple of months. Thanks. Well, Andrew, that's a great question. And we get asked it all the time, certainly on Mailbag. Back when I was doing Collider Mailbag, I was asked about it a couple of times. And I used to answer Watchmen. Watchmen is always the number one thing that I saw the first time. After the first 20 or 30 minutes, which I thought were stupendous, I felt like Zack Snyder was tracing essentially the Alan Moore graphic novel and not necessarily putting his voice into the movie. And yes, he adjusted some things to make it more modern and make it more relevant to what's going on in the world. But overall, I felt it wasn't quite as strong. But then I watched the director's cut, his cut, the ultimate cut, and it is fantastic. Let me tell you something. If you haven't seen the director's cut of Watchmen, it will absolutely change your opinion of the movie. He does such a great job. Now, it's not Watchmen from the TV series. That's for damn sure. Zach takes it in another direction. So don't compare the two. They're not comparable in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion. This one is based on the graphic novel. He does make some adjustments, but fleshes out his voice a little more strongly in the director's cut than in the original cut. All right, but there are two other ones that I want to jump into. Raging Bull and Casino. It's ironic, both of these Martin Scorsese films, and usually I'm a big Martin Scorsese fan, but I have to say, the first time I saw Raging Bull, I was a little bored. I was a little bit bored, and I was like, okay, I get it's in black and white, he's stylish, but also this guy is not a nice guy to know. A very violent guy, abusive, you know, seducing an underage girl, all that stuff that Jake LaMotta does, the character of Jake LaMotta does, beating up his brother, Joe Pesci, who's played by Joe Pesci, rather, the way he does, out of his own jealousy and anger. But as you get older as a man or as a human being, you start to understand the motives for why people do the things they do, right? As you get older, you understand this guy clearly came from a broken home. Clearly, this guy had some mental health issues he needed to work out, some ideas about the world he needed to come to terms with. And when I watched it later on, when I got older, I started to understand and appreciate the character a little bit more. It doesn't excuse this terrible stuff he did, but it was great to see, like, that scene when he is punching the prison and punching the walls in the prison, seeing his anger, seeing his frustration, his tears. All of that is the rage inside of him that he has taken out on other people now come to light, and he has taken it out on himself by damaging the things that got him to a title, got him some fame and notoriety, and that's his hands. Destroying the tools with which he achieves success because he was not able to stop his self-destructive impulses and his terrible desires to destroy things around him because he hated himself. And so you see that progress to the point where he has that meeting with Joe Pesci later on in the movie. It's very touching. And it's still a tragic tale. But in the end, he was able to overcome it and become a better person because of it. So the idea of redemption is possible out there for you if you do the work and realize what you've been doing wrong in your life and try to make amends as much as possible with the people you've hurt. So I think the film carries way more resonance now than it ever did for me the first time I watched it. Another one is Casino. Casino, I did not like the first time, mainly because I did not like the Sharon Stone character. I hated that she was using everybody and manipulating everybody and playing the victim all the time. It frustrated the living hell out of me. But again, again, as I got older, I started to understand, you know, in a patriarchal world, these decisions that are made by women to survive and do the things that they need to do here, you see it. And she never really loved Ace Rothstein, and Ace Rothstein is an absolute idiot for having handed over his heart and his money and his life to this woman who clearly was in love with somebody else. When you see that, this is clearly a lost woman who's, you know, got her own issues she's trying to work out. She's got a child. She's in love with a loser like the James Woods character in the movie. And here's a man with all this money, all these connections, all this fame there in Vegas, and she can't like get past her own love for this guy because for whatever reason, from her upbringing, whatever is going on with her personally, she feels more of a connection to the James Woods character than the Robert De Niro character. So seeing it again as I got older, I really appreciated that. Plus, love the chemistry between Don Rickles and De Niro in this, between Joe Pesci, who is absolutely brutal in this movie, and De Niro as well. Seeing that kind of develop overall, it's fun to watch. Plus, the way Scorsese directs the movie, right? Overall, I really appreciate and cherish Casino, and it's one that I always watch whenever I'm flipping channels. All right, thank you for that question, Andrew Hale. Really appreciate it. All right, let's move on to our next question. All right, this one's from Mike Shea. Mike Shea, who is, you know, who runs the Outlaw Nation Facebook group. Shout out to Mike Shea there and all the work he's doing. You know, the Ultimate Schmodown show has come out on the Outlaw Nation Facebook group. If you're not a member of the Outlaw Nation Facebook group, you need to be a member of the Outlaw Nation Facebook group and enjoy this show, the Ultimate Schmodown show. It's our entry into the Schmodown reaction and analysis shows, and I think it's a damn good one. You know, Mike Shea and I, we watched a bunch of videos from people who submitted who wanted to be part of the show, and I think we picked three really good people to be a part of it: Colin Morris, John Barr, and Amrik Bogle. Those are all three of them have developed some fantastic chemistry already in the second episode. You can tell they're light years better than they were in the first episode. So if you haven't watched it, go on the Outlaw Nation Facebook group and watch them break down all those matches from last week, preview next week's matches, and even talk about Brandon Hanna's managerial skills on that. It's a lot of fun. Certainly a great time for you to enjoy and appreciate and discover and explore a new show, a new Schmodown, a reaction analysis show. So shout out to those guys over there. Keep doing the things you're doing. And if you're watching this and you're a female Schmodown fan and you think you can be a part of a show like this, we are looking for a female fourth to join this crew and be a part of the show. Love it to be a person of color, but it doesn't have to be necessarily. We're just looking for a female Schmodown fan to kind of round things out so we have some good perspective on all the players. Send in a video to, I think it's Deputy Mike Shea, MikeSheA @gmail.com. Send us a 1 to 2 minute video about why you'd be great on the show. Then we'll set up a chemistry test with all four of you to see if you've got a good chemistry. And then boom, you're on the show. That's how it's going to work. So Mike Shea, let's jump into your question. He said, with the urge to see more racial diversity represented in film and wanting to do away with the whitewashing of characters, do you think it's time for a new take on the character of Zorro? There have been some good ones in the past, but just as many that weren't. I'd love to see someone like Diego Luna make a more serious, heartfelt attempt at the character. Great question, Mike, and you're right. As things are changing here in our world, and it seems like all of a sudden with these Black Lives Matter protests, which are fantastic, we see now the entertainment world paying attention once and for all in a larger way. Certainly with the Oscars, that A2020 program about getting more and more diversity in their in their ranks, more and more diversity on production sets, more and more diversity in casting and behind the scenes. That all of it is got some great intentions. So the idea of Zorro is great too, because look, there's not a lot of Latino superheroes. We really don't get a chance to shine in the superhero movies. Yes, we've seen in the comics, the Latinos have stepped in and taken over the mantle of other things. I think Miles Morales is half black, half Latino. I think that's right. And then you have Ted Kord. Ted Kord stepped away from Blue Beetle. And I think it's Juan Reyes who stepped in and took over as a Blue Beetle there. But you know, we don't have a lot of superheroes that are Latino from the start and go forward. So Zorro is one of those that could essentially be, yes, he's a folk hero, but you could argue a little bit of a superhero, wears the mask, tries to, help disenfranchised people and poor people from being abused by the powers that be. So certainly that's that seems to check all the superhero boxes in my mind. But there was, we've seen the Mask of Zorro, which was a fantastic film from Martin Campbell with Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Anthony Hopkins, and the sequel, which didn't do as well, wasn't as good of a movie, but that was out there for a bit. We've seen Zorro the Gay Blade in the 80s, which I will ultimately defend. I do enjoy that movie. We've seen Tyrone Power back in the, I think, 50s doing his version of Zorro. So Zorro is something that has always kind of permeated the American pop culture mainstream and has, and when it's done well, has yielded positive results from the fan bases that have watched them. And there was a Zorro reboot that was on the way. There were two versions that were touted here, and I'm getting this from 2019 and 2018. A Zorro reboot that was titled Z was on the way as a film, and the film would take the classic tale, The Dashing Swordsman in Black, and move the setting from early 1800s Spanish-controlled California to the future. But official details on Z didn't drop till a little bit last year when Gael Garcia Bernal had been cast in the project. He revealed in an interview with Variety that Z takes place in a time where California never became part of the United States. So kind of an alternate timeline situation here. Instead, California remained under Spanish control and is called New Spain. And quote, the movie will involve slavery and a clash between Catholic people who spoke Spanish and Puritans who spoke English. It was supposed to be directed by Jonas Cuarón, who is Alfonso Cuarón's son. Kiersey Clemons was cast as the female lead in Z as well, but we haven't heard much about it since. And of course, with production delays and production shutdowns, we probably won't hear about it for quite some time. But there was also a TV series that was being done, also named Z. This was done as a CBS TV studios had it in development as a female-led reboot of Zorro. It is described as a modern-day retelling of the Zorro mythology that follows Z, a female descendant of a warrior bloodline who will go to great lengths to protect the defenseless in her community. And the last we read, the project was currently set at NBC. So certainly, Mike, there is interest for Zorro all across the board. Don't know if it's going to be the film version or TV version, but some point down the road, I think for sure, we've got to have a Zorro. And I love the idea of Diego Luna. It's not a bad idea, but Pedro Pascal is another interesting idea. And I'm sure there are other strong Latino actors that are coming into our consciousness and in front of our eyes in other media that we could look to down the road as well. Once this thing actually gets off the ground and starts to get made, we'll see if Gael Garcia Bernal is the choice in the end. The other option as well is the guy who is in Terminator Dark Fate. He's Gabriel Luna, I think his name. I thought he was fantastic in Terminator Dark Fate. Be interesting to see him play a hero instead of a villain. That would be fun. So we'll see, Mike. But I appreciate the question. Thank you very much. All right, our next question is from Fanboy Cantina. He asks, in retrospect, what 80s TV shows are problematic with a 2020 perspective? The Confederate flag on the General Lee, Murdoch's mental illness on the A-Team, are these valid? Other examples. Well, certainly the Confederate flag on the General Lee is valid. It's about Bo and Luke Duke. The Duke brothers always getting away with things. You know, Waylon Jennings' song, which is one of my favorite theme songs for any TV show ever, you know, making their way the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow. Yeah, and the law is being, you know, Roscoe P. Coltrane. You had Boss Hogg in there. I don't necessarily look at the Dukes of Hazzard as a bad show because they were always trying to help people. But the Confederate flag, you can't deny it. That's an issue. So those are the things that come into play. I think in 2015, yeah, TV Land removed the Dukes of Hazzard reruns from its schedule just 3 weeks after it began airing them because people were upset with the Confederate flag being there. So I don't know if there's a way to go back and maybe digitally alter that Confederate flag to just a United States flag. I don't know, but you'd still lose some of the flavor of the show. And of course, calling the car General Lee, a reference to Robert E. Lee, there are some questionable things in Robert E. Lee's past as well. So, or questionable, or terrible things in his past. So I think people would have a problem with it. Another show from the 80s, Married with Children. There's no way Married with Children happens nowadays with its vulgar jokes about women, homosexuals, and everyone else. There's no way anyone touches that show nowadays. Another one was Baywatch, right? There's no way Baywatch gets done nowadays. Do you think? I know that remake, that film remake with The Rock, did not do well. Zac Efron in that one as well. I think Alexandra Daddario's in that one as well. Did not do well, but the show itself, you know, it's a pretty, I know it has some flimsy plots and all of that, but it is pretty focused on women in bathing suits. And I think nowadays that is not going to strike the right tone with a lot of people out there now who want to see more developed, more nuanced, more complex entertainment. You can still have fun. You just don't have to, turn women into objects of to be ogled at. So I think that would be changed for sure. And also, I think I'd be shocked if we see more sitcoms coming down the pike that were like Home Improvement, Everybody Loves Raymond, and King of Queens, where you have the slob husband countered with the woman who is clearly way more intelligent than he is, but is portrayed as a nagging wife. I think that trope is going to be done as well with sitcoms going forward. I don't think you get away with that nowadays at all, because it was always weird when you saw it. You just laughed along with it most of the time, but it was always weird when you saw it. Another one is, of course, The Cosby Show. No way The Cosby Show. It's problematic now to look back and watch that. Cheers is another one, because Norm is essentially an alcoholic who hates going home to his wife. So I don't know if necessarily you'd get away with that one. Another one is probably Growing Pains, too. Remember the Siever brothers? They made fun of Carol's weight. It was played by Tracy Gold almost all the time in the show. And Tracy Gold even has the character of Carol even has a terrible nightmare, quote unquote, where she is an overweight woman. And so you can't get away with that kind of stuff. And it would be terrible nowadays, the body shame. There are some problematic stuff in Friends as well. It's not just in the 80s, certainly in the 90s, up into the 2000s. Yeah, there's some problematic shows you can take a look at that wouldn't function, just not in the 80s. So it's all over the place. But great question. I appreciate that. Very good question from you there, Fanboy Cantina. Thank you so much. All right, let's get to our last question here. And it's from Andrew Burnett. He says, what has changed the most in the Schmodown since starting? The depth of the questions being asked, the live events, a part of the gameplay, JTE rules, etc. Well, look, I appreciate this question, Andrew, and it's a fantastic question. It seems to get asked a little bit more nowadays as we go into the seventh season or experience in the seventh season. What has changed about the game, or what has changed the most in the Schmodown? Look, the depth of the questions being asked, I think, is number one in my mind. The live events was always in Christian's purview. It was always something he wanted to do, It was always something he wanted to do. And so when it happened, I was already ready for it. And I knew, and I was excited for it. And it's been a blast to be part of the live events that I've been a part of. It's been a blast to see all the people enjoying the live events that they have been a part of and enjoying it with the fans as well. The fans have been a fantastic, an essential part of the live events, not just because they're in the crowd, but because they're there outside before the event starts, giving you so much love, talking with you, having fun with you. It's a great way to connect. And then afterwards as well, you've seen those videos of them cheering on Kevin Smets when he came out and had won Schmodown Spectacular, the Action Army showing up and giving him some love. So that's great stuff. We've got the Outlaw Nation out there, all those fives for the Horsemen that popped up in Orlando. So certainly out there, certainly the reception I got when I came out in my first match against JTE at the live event there in North Hollywood was an incredibly overwhelming moment for me that I'll never forget for the rest of my life. So live events are great parts of these things, but they're not the things that has changed the most for me. And the gameplay has changed a lot. It has. But for me, I always just kind of roll with the changes. So I don't necessarily think that wasn't something that was always going to be in play. I'm just like, well, what's the rules? Great, let's play. Let's just get in there and play. It's always all about knowledge. Yeah, gameplay comes into play for sure, but it's about what you know. You still have to answer the questions. You can maneuver. You can think it all through. You can try to, you know, create a beautiful mind theorem and all of that jazz. But if you don't know the answer to the questions, it's irrelevant. So it'll always be about knowledge. Gameplay is gameplay, but it'll always, always be about knowledge. So for me, the thing that's changed the most, as I said, is the questions being asked. And look, this was, you could say this was coming, of course, because as you ask more and more questions, there are a lot of movies, but eventually they're going to have to get deeper and deeper as you ascribe higher points to those questions and those answers. The questions are bound to get deeper and deeper. So that's just part of it. And I would also throw in as a 1A, the level of competition that has come into the Schmodown has also been one of the biggest changes. Over the last 2 years, we've seen people come in who get it, who understand the preparation before they even walk through the door for their first match. They know that they've got to study like crazy. Certainly this rookie class that came in this year has been incredible. Last year has been incredible with Chance and with Oyama both winning belts during their calendar rookie year. So I love all the great new rookies that have come in here and done some great work. And we've seen some in the Star Wars tournament. We've seen some in the IG tournament recently as well. You know, male and female rookies coming in, kind of showing out and showing what they can do. It's been great. That has put a lot of us older players, us veteran players, quote unquote, on notice about the kind of attention and study and dedication we need to rediscover or have more of if we're going to compete against these young people coming in for belts and for titles and for status and for legacy. So there you go. All right. Well, thank you all so much for watching this first episode of Ask the Outlaw here on the Outlaw Nation channel. Like I said, I made this video available for everybody to enjoy and watch. But to ask questions, you have to be part of the Patreon. That's www.patreon.com/JohnRocha. Join at the $5 tier and above, and you can submit questions, and I pick 8 to 10 questions from all the submissions. Also, please make sure you hit that like button on this video and like and share this video as well. Once again, big thanks to Andrew Hale, my producer on the show, for getting everything squared away. And thanks to all of you for submitting your questions, and thanks to all of you for watching. Please follow me at The Rocha Says on Twitter and on Instagram, and subscribe to the YouTube channel just below. And, you know, that's it for me. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves. Have a great rest of your day, and make sure you join the Patreon so you can one day have a question that you can submit to Ask the Outlaw.